this week on The Inside Flap.
And I remember reading that pillows were sort of a late medieval invention. They didn't have pillows back in the early days. And so when you lay down to sleep, you would rest your head on a log. And I sort of thought,
no thanks.
Suddenly, that picture of someone lying there with their head propped up on a log, and how uncomfortable it would have been. It made it feel very real to me, but I really had to dig for those details. They were hard to find.
Play with him a little more, got him for a nap, went out for a run, got back, got him out, playing him in the backyard. And I remember I said to myself, I said, man, I'm getting hungry. Maybe I'll fix myself a little early lunch. It's got to be almost lunchtime.
Oh, no.
Looked at my watch. It was 9:15 in the morning. 9:15. No lie. I thought it was lunchtime.
The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Medicus, and welcome to our show. Seated across the table in the snack shack, to my right, that's Laurie Medicus.
Howdy. I almost forgot what I was going to say.
It's not that hard to remember.
I know, but I wanted to say adios.
Literally one word. We are just getting started.
I really
not
did.
Ending. And resting comfortably on the floral settee, that's Andrew Dowd.
Aloha.
Okay.
There you
See,
go.
Now, well, that's hello or goodbye. So
that's right.
You because, know, you always got to go with... yeah.
Because I don't know whether I'm coming or going today.
That's right. And I continue to steal from George Carlin. Mm. Welcome to...
The Inside Flap
Podcast, episode number 259. And we have a great guest for you today. We are joined by number one New York Times bestselling author of the Magicians trilogy, Lev Grossman. Now, that was adapted as a TV show that ran for 5 seasons on Sci-Fi. Lev was a lot of fun to talk to. He's got a great... Listen, his new book out right now. Laura, I know you absolutely love this book.
I absolutely loved it.
It is called The Bright Sword. We'll have more about that book, and we'll have our chat with Lev for you in just a bit. But first, got to play Mr. Mom for the last 5 days or so here. Now, when I say that I played Mr. Mom, I'm not referring to Sylvia. Now, Sylvia was here in town, but pretty much non-existent. She's got a boyfriend, and I literally maybe saw her for a couple. Listen, so you were going away to Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, 4 days alone. Sylvia's here. You know, she works during the day, but I figured I had like a huge list of movies that I've been meaning to show her.
Oh.
And
but she has a boyfriend.
She has a boyfriend.
And she's 18.
I managed to show her.
You showed her one.
I showed her one and a half. I showed her Glengarry Glen Ross over 2 days.
That's pretty good.
And it took, you know, me showing it to her in the middle of the afternoon.
So here's what I got.
The worst time to watch a movie, by the way, in the middle of the afternoon.
So here's what I got. So I'm out with Joyce. We're shopping around. We're walking around Bel Air, Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm
Bel
getting...
Bel Air to your hon.
Blair Road.
It's Blair.
Yeah,
Blair.
But I'm going to pronounce it Bel Air.
Okay.
And I'm getting hot texts with young pictures of Alec Baldwin.
Oh, yes.
From both of you guys.
This is funny. Sylvia had no idea that Alec Baldwin, because she knows Alec Baldwin from watching 30 Rock.
Yeah.
She had no idea that he used to be like this young hunk, like a good-looking guy.
Yeah.
Did she think he was good-looking and Glengarry? I can't.
Oh, yeah. No, he is. As soon as she saw him, she's like, what? She's like, that's not Alec Baldwin. I said, that's Alec Baldwin.
That's funny. He
and
still has a certain magnetism.
He does. And it's amazing to see him in that movie as he was... Like everybody else, you know, Ed Harris, Jack Lemmon.
Oh, I love Ed Harris.
You've got just a litany, Al Pacino, an all-star cast of established stars. And Baldwin comes in here as the new kid on the block and just knocks it out of the park, just kills, crushes, and has to go up against all these guys. Kevin Spacey, and, you know, well, I don't know if we're allowed to talk about Kevin Spacey, but at the time...
He was good.
He was a great actor.
Yeah.
But having to go up against this murderer's row of actors and play the heavy in this scene, he just... He turned it into a franchise. I mean, they made a little... children's movie out of it. Anyway, so, but yeah, so I was Mr. Mom for not Sylvia, but for, and he's around her somewhere, for the puppy.
He might be under Andrew.
I think he might be underneath the floral settee.
He likes to sleep under the floral
settee. He's resting comfortably under the floral.
It's a little den. It feels safe, and the floor is nice and cool.
And yeah, and I don't think I told you about how he, did I tell you how he discovered how to get under the floral settee?
No.
All right. So I was in, amidst these 4 days, the four longest days of my life while you were gone.
Sorry.
And I was, no, just kidding.
It actually.
But it's once again, it takes you right back
to babies.
To what it's like having a baby.
Baby.
If we put it,
Dave
he's
was
got,
a joy to be around with a baby.
He's got nap times, he's got a morning nap time, and he's got an afternoon nap time. And so I take him in there, and even the vet said, listen, when you pick him up, hold him like a baby. You cradle him, you got his, literally hold him like a baby, feed him from your hand. Mm-hmm. So all this stuff we're doing, and then we got nap time. In time, we got these blackout drapes. They came just because the Colorado sun is strong here. You know, we're mile high. So we got blackout drapes in the bedroom. We got the white noise machine that is now has been on for 1 week straight. It's just on. Because with the puppy, you know, he's up at 5:30 in the morning.
I also haven't made the bed. I'm a bed maker. I like making the bed.
He's up at 5:30. He's up to pee at 4. And then when you were away, Laura, you know, I had Sylvia check in with me at 1.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, just
sure.
So it's
she's
nice
coming
to,
home.
So
that's
you know,
when
to
she
let
comes
her,
home.
That's her curfew. I wanted to check in. So I'm awake at 1, hard to get back to sleep. Thank you, Lance Armstrong, for your podcast, so I can listen to that lying in bed. I'm awake at 4 when the puppy whines and scratches to get out of the crate, and then literally
to go potty.
Yeah, to go potty. Take him outside. He goes potty. Literally, as I'm just getting back to sleep, it's 5:30 in the morning, and he's up and ready to face the day, and we go outside, and we face the day. But the thing about, and so that is why it is very important for me to get him down for these naps, so I can have just a little bit of time where I don't have to constantly be aware of where the puppy is. Because, you know, Andrew, you can't leave this puppy alone. There's no place for him to be. You have to be with him at all times. You know, we've got this little playpen area. We try to put him in. He lasts for like 10 minutes before he starts crying or whining. So he's always there, and you always got an eye on him as we're all looking at him right now as he's underfoot, and now he's whining around the snack shack. So these nap times are very important, so I get my run in. So I carry him in there into the bedroom, put him in his crate, and when I get him in the crate, and he's doing a great job at sleeping in his crate, in the nighttime, but getting him down for the nap, I put him in there, close the crate, and then it's a matter of, okay, do I run out of the room as fast as I can, shut the door, and I'm out? Or is it a matter of, well, let me put him down here, and then it's, and Andrew, I don't know if you remember, you got 3 young kids, but you know what it's like putting them down for a nap. You gotta make sure they're asleep. And then once they're asleep, it's the, now I got to get out of the room without them waking up. So that's when it's like the Mission Impossible, tiptoe to the door. And it takes me literally, it's how fast 15 years can come flying by. And you remember exactly how to do it and exactly what it was like as you're creeping out the door.
It is true.
Get out of there.
It is definitely true.
Well, I would say is with 3 kids, the 3rd kid nap time, because nap time
on
the floor of the kitchen.
It holds everybody hostage.
It does hold everyone hostage.
You know, can we go do something as a family? No.
No, it's nap time.
But it's, you know, it just holds everybody hostage. But I just remember, you know, before you got Teddy.
Yes.
You know, I was asking you about like puppy behavior and stuff like that. Like, oh, right. No, it's going to be rainbows and sunshine and everything is going to be great. Well, I think reality has set in.
Oh, yeah. No, it's rough. As last night when Laura got in, or I guess yesterday afternoon when she got in, and I think I was out of it by 5. I was all excited to watch the home run derby. I was dead asleep on the couch
during the home run derby.
Gunnar Henderson going at it at the home run derby.
Gunnar Henderson embarrassing
himself. Come on, Baltimore, let's go. But yeah, but the nice thing is now, so I'd get him down, and what we didn't have, what we used to have, you know, with Sylvia was the old and Andrew. I don't know. Did you have like a camera? Or did you have just like
a monitor?
The nanny monitor? We just had the sound.
No, we had a camera for sure.
Yep. Oh, okay.
Yep.
Well, his kids are younger.
That's true. Yeah. We were, you know, 15, 20 years ago. It wasn't as popular.
And we had 3, so we probably had multiple cameras. Okay. You know, multiple different
17
devices.
Years ago. Yeah. They're
like doing a 3-camera shoot. Well, now I got the Ring camera. So what I would do is set it up so that now if I'm out for my run, I can get the old, and because when I set it up, it was right at the 4th of July. So now I'm out for my run. I'm halfway through my run every day. And every time he rolls over, and he likes to roll over a lot in his crate, but every time he rolls over, I hear. So every time I hear that, I'm like, oh, it just sends like a little dagger into my chest. Like, oh, he's getting up. He's getting up. I got to get back. I pull up the video and I can see, you know, what he's doing, which is nice that you got that.
Now, for our kids, we actually had to buy something which is illegal in the U.S.
Oh, okay.
But has the statute of limitations run out?
No, we had to buy something from overseas.
What'd you buy?
And so for our kids, we bought crib tents. And specific crib tents, and they won't sell them because they deem them unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
But
Inch is putting a lot of air quotes.
Being flown.
But we would buy these crib tents. I mean, you could still get them in Australia, but basically that way, when you put the baby in the crib, the baby stays in the crib.
Oh, it doesn't crawl out.
Because you can't put kids in a dog crate.
Oh, I think
they frown. They right, frown
they do
on that.
Kind of frown upon that.
So the crib tent's about as close as we can get.
I see.
Yeah. I see.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Because well,
that is a thing. All of a sudden, they're able to get out. Yeah. And you're like, well, now what am I gonna do?
Well, right. And it's a safety issue. Yeah, they climb out. They fall on the floor.
Yeah.
They could be anywhere.
Did you have a climber?
I think all the kids at some point.
Sylvia wasn't
out.
A climber.
Yeah. No, she was not.
Mm-mm. She just talked. She would just talk.
Well, a lot
talk
of talking, a lot of jibber jabber. Yeah. Yeah, but he was good. The only thing, I mean, it's just hard when you're used to getting up at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning to now go back to. I know Andrew, he's rolling out of the rack at 4:30. He's good to go. But for me to get up at 5:30, and then I remember the one day I got up at 5. He might have got up at probably got up at 5:15. Got up with him, took him into the backyard, played with him. We played with the ball for a while.
He's very active in the mornings.
Yeah, got Sylvia up, made sure she was up for work, made her lunch for her, made sure she got off to work all right, play with him a little more, got him for a nap, went out for a run, got back, got him out, playing him in the backyard. And I remember I said to myself, I said, man, I'm getting hungry. Maybe I'll fix myself a little early lunch. It's got to be almost lunchtime.
Oh, no.
Looked at my watch. It was 9:15 in the morning. 9:15. No lie. I thought it was lunchtime. I was ready to make myself a ham and cheese sandwich. Yeah. Now, needless to say, we didn't have any ham. I didn't have any rolls. But I still really wanted a ham and cheese sandwich. 9:15. I was stunned.
Yeah.
I thought at least it was 11 o'clock. It was 9:15 in the morning.
Yeah. I got up with Teddy this morning, and Teddy and I were ready for our lunch at 11.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's insane.
We were ready.
It's absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Now, I will say last week, the Teddy reminded me of like Deputy Dog. Okay. You know, the slow cartoon dog.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I don't
yeah.
know what it's, I think it's like Deputy Dog, but it's just like dog. Because he was cautious. He was afraid of everything.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
Well,
right.
A week later.
That's
true.
That's right.
He's kind of like the Flash. right? Because he's like zipping along. He's in everything. He's chewing everything. He's
figured everything out. He sniffed every corner, every inch of the backyard. And now he knows, and we apologize if you can hear the squeaking in the background, but, you know, we got Sylvia's out with Thomas. Oh, I don't know if we're allowed to say his name.
Shmamas.
He's got nowhere else to be but
Sylvia's
with us.
Sylvia's doing a good job, I have to say, of letting us get used to life without her.
she's doing a wonderful job of that. Anyways, that's been my life for the last 4 days. Laura, how have you been? Hobnobbing it up with the hoi polloi out there in humidity-ridden Baltimore.
Yeah, so I had a great trip. I honestly didn't enjoy my time as much as I could have because it was dampened by me worrying about Dave. Because I felt bad.
She likes to say this to make me feel better.
No, but, I really did. I felt bad the whole time. And then I still have access to the Ring cams while I'm out there.
You do.
So then I would hear the bum, 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 bum. I would hear all that. Uh-huh. I'd know the struggle that you were going through. Mm-hmm. I could see what time.
There you go. You have
I
that
could
same
see what time you had woken
see,
up.
Right then, it just sent a little shiver through my spine.
My friend Joyce was like, she's like, how many cameras do you guys have? Yeah.
Well, we got the Ring camera in the front of the house.
I also have a bird cam that goes off for no reason.
For no reason. Not for birds.
No, not for
birds. No.
Heaven forbid a bird land on the bird feeder.
Calling all birds, feel free to come and visit our bird feeder. Yeah. Andrew, maybe you can send some of your birds our way.
Send some of your birds.
Yeah, we'll have to take a look and see.
I have an offer. You take a squirrel, bring a bird.
I like that. I like that. We got plenty of those here.
Yeah, take a squirrel, bring a bird.
Yeah, we can do that.
All right, great. Deal. Yeah. But good visit. Good visit with Joyce.
Yeah, we had a great time. And
I know I was very excited to see you brought back the Otterbein cookies.
I brought back Otterbein cookies. I tried to fit in. You know, everything there is Old Bay, right? That's Maryland's.
Yes.
They're excited about two things. They're excited about the Orioles right now, and they're excited about the Otterbein this time of year.
Remember Kate Quinn, we just talked to, who told us about the Old Bay martinis.
Yeah, so Old Bay is everything.
Andrew, if you can imagine that.
Oh, I can, yeah.
Yeah. So it was Old Bay on caramel corn. Popcorn.
Oh my God.
And so I tried to, it actually was weirdly good.
With the sweet and the salty?
A little bit of the salty.
Okay.
And they didn't overdo it on the Old Bay.
I guess, but just the
it
dusting.
It was a dusting.
Okay.
But it was in the same size container as the Otterbein. So the Otterbein won out. The chocolate chip cookies from Otterbein.
The Otterbein chocolate chip, you can't go wrong.
No, nice, they're thin, crisp, and delicious.
Really good.
Yeah. We had a great time though, but the humidity out there is something
brutal.
It is brutal. Yeah, we were able to get a lot of good steps in. We even took a hike one morning. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know how we were able to do that, to be perfectly honest, but we did. Yeah.
I mean, how long did it take before your shirt was completely drenched?
I mean, it was, it doesn't take long.
No.
It doesn't take long. And the last little bit of it was pretty brutal, but I hadn't been in Harford County, which is a very rural county in Maryland. I really hadn't spent much time in there, so it's kind of nice to see. And it's the kind of place where they have like farm stands with like giant tomatoes and peaches are in season there, and corn.
And you can get great produce in Maryland.
Really good produce.
I mean, the cantaloupe, the silver
cream
corn.
Yes, the cantaloupe. Absolutely, yes.
What about snowball stand? Now, Andrew and I hit up the snowball stand.
I gotta tell you what I saw, and I was disappointed.
Ate half of it before.
It was like a Kona ice stand or something like that.
No.
It was shaved ice.
No.
It was shaved ice.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I did not see the snow cone.
No.
So let me say. So Kona ice, they make the biggest mistake.
Yeah.
They make the biggest mistake with snow cones. And they have the worst syrup.
The syrup
is awful. You might as well just be... There might as well be water on there. It has no taste.
The syrups are so bad.
No flavor to it.
Here's a question, too. Is the ice in the shaved ice different than a snow cone?
Yeah, the texture is different.
It's the texture.
It's all about the texture. It's shaved, and it's like soft, and it kind of melts when you put it on your tongue. Yeah. I like the crushed ice.
I like whatever it is,
when you
the
get
snow cone.
From the snow cones in Maryland. It's completely different.
Yep.
You can't find that out here.
It's a little coarser. It's a little
coarser.
Right.
It's a little colder.
It's got a little bite to it. Yeah. And it's colder.
Yeah.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, so I didn't see a snow cone stand. All kinds of farmer stands. Everywhere. Well, nowadays you Venmo. Remember how it used to be in our day? You'd have a jar with money.
Oh yeah.
And now they have a Venmo. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
But
times have changed.
But for me, the franchise. I think Kona's a franchise, and it's a truck and everything.
And it wasn't Kona. I should say it was some other brand, but it was shaved ice. It was not a snow cone.
Yeah. Well, Kona specifically, their flavors are awful. You could put as much of that stuff as you want on there.
I agree.
It still tastes like nothing.
Really?
Completely agree with you. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. But we had a great time. I'm trying to think of anything. You know, we played Scrabble. We talked outside.
Who won the Scrabble games?
I won both times. Oh, I got in the 200s.
What?
My
Check
first
out
game.
The big brain on.
I did.
Stop it.
The best I have ever done with my first game.
Wow.
And so then I think they all thought like, watch out.
Did it go to your head?
My second game was, it didn't go to my head because I know better about myself.
Sure. Yeah.
But then the second game was not as successful. And I think they were all a little disappointed in me.
So speaking of Scrabble.
Crabble. That's the Old Bay game.
I had a friend's house and we stayed at a friend's house. She was out of town. We stayed at her house.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put, so basically we pulled out her Scrabble game. You know, the wife and I.
Oh, I know. And you pulled out the score.
And we pulled out the scorecard.
Okay, yeah. Oh.
And
I always love doing that.
And
her
and her family are brilliant at Scrabble.
Wow.
Oh, no.
And so I think the scores are like 800s.
Wow.
Whoa. I mean, we're just talking, remind me never to play, and this is Laura Applebaum.
It's I bet.
And it's like, she has to be like genius level.
Yeah.
But it's like, remind me never to play.
I got a 250.
That's a high score.
And I was
very
excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did really,
that's a really,
really
high score.
Well.
And I had triple word scores or what are we talking?
I was hitting everything. I was doing multiple words to get up and down because I was able to go through it. I was
triple little score with a J.
I was doing beautiful things.
And I actually think I had
good letters.
I would be remiss if I didn't play a game of Scrabble with Laura Applebaum.
You would.
Just to see.
See how she does it.
You gotta,
like, just to see what that's like.
Yeah, I want to know if she's using a dictionary. Like, what is she doing?
I don't think so at all.
Wow.
Right. No, I can imagine her saying, well, no, you get one challenge per game. And if your challenge is wrong, you lose your turn.
Yeah, I imagine she's a stickler for the rules.
Yeah.
But, I should give that a try.
She's a professor or something, isn't she?
I think she was. She was in academics for a while. And I don't know what her degree is
academics.
But now, what is that book? What's the Scrabble book, since this is a book podcast?
Mm-hmm.
The Scrabble Dictionary?
No, there's a book.
There's a documentary.
Yeah, and there's
that's New York Times crossword.
And there's a book. We'll have to look that up. But
I don't know the book.
I tell you, it is an extremely...
Scrabble book.
Yeah, it's a book about Scrabble.
Like fiction about the history of
it's
it?
It's about the world of competitive Scrabble.
Oh, interesting.
Are you thinking of Scrapple?
No.
Oh, my friend Joyce did buy some Scrapple.
Oh,
she said,
man.
Have you ever had from the butcher? Because out in Maryland.
What?
Okay, here's another thing.
The butcher makes Scrapple?
Here's the thing that don't tell her. Shh.
Parts is parts.
Joyce is not listening.
That I feel annoyed by because
Renata listens. Your friend
because
Renata,
I like convenience.
Yeah.
In order to get anything out there.
Oh, you were complaining about this.
You got to go to one farm stand and get your fruit.
Right.
You go to the fish market and get your seafood. Mm. You then go to the butcher to get the red meat or whatever else you want. Then you still got to go to the Food Lion.
Oh, yeah.
To get your pretzels and snacks and things like that.
Yeah.
It was a lot of driving.
It's like a half a day affair. And
it's
not like everything's right around the corner.
No.
Yeah. Mm. And you send me a picture of that butcher shop, just a picture.
I did.
All I could see was red meat.
Oh, it was all red meat.
It does everywhere. Red meat.
Yeah, it was a ton of meat.
Red meat. Yeah, a lot of red meat. Andrew, you into the red meat? You still eating a lot of the red meat?
No, I eat some. I mean, I wouldn't say we eat a ton of it.
Yeah.
But what I would say I do for dietary reasons is a lot of times I don't put any protein on the food. You know, I'll just do a vegetarian entree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a Thai restaurant.
Well, you know, with Sylvia being a vegetarian, that pretty much makes us vegetarians, although I'll grill up some chicken and throw it on salads and stuff like that.
And that's why every once in a while I'll bring some
some Andrew meat. Brought a sausage last week.
How was it? Did it go to waste?
All right. Do you want the truth or do you want me to be nice here? It was burnt to a crisp.
It was grilled.
It was better.
Better when it was fresh.
Did Katie grill it or did you grill it?
Katie grilled that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm surprised because she is the better griller. Yeah,
give this one to Matt.
It was good. It was good when it was fresh.
Blackened.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really funny.
That's all right.
I think it had to do with how Matt reheated it. I think he went.
I ate it cold.
He went nuclear with
it. I ate it cold.
All right.
Yeah. So I had a good time. I missed you guys though.
Yes.
Because I
definitely missed you.
Dave goes away a lot.
I do go away a lot.
He goes away with his friend Dave.
Dave Thomas.
He goes down to see his mom and dad in Tucson.
In fact, going down there this weekend.
Yep. I don't go away by myself very often. I am a homebody. Mm-hmm. Like, I do love to travel. I like to take vacations, but I like it with my family.
Yeah.
I'm not someone who is going to just go. So this was I haven't taken a trip like this ever.
Right.
And of course, so I did feel a little bad, but at the same time, I was like, well,
it was great. It was good. Dave always goes. Exactly. No, it was glad.
This is my time. I'm glad I can go.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Glad you got to spend a lot of time with red meat.
I did see a lot of red meat.
First name red, last name.
I couldn't escape it also, but.
I'm red meat.
That's okay. I had delicious crab cakes.
You did. Ooh, you sent me a picture
of a
crab cake.
It was an 8-ounce crab cake. I don't think there was any breading in it, and it was
all meat, nicely browned on the outside, a little salad next to it. Looked delightful.
It was so good.
Mm.
Yeah. Andrew, how have you been? I know the first word starts with a B, and it ends with a Y.
I'll skip over
okay,
that. But
okay.
Booty?
Right,
booty?
So, booty.
So basically, I'm basically in Summer Institute. Taking classes.
What? You've been arrested? What?
Taking classes on.
Did we miss something?
On how to be a teacher, right?
Okay.
Right. Andrew is jamming 4 years of college into one summer.
Sylvia is starting in the fall.
Yeah. So
that's right. Need to get her into this.
And I enjoy it. To be honest, I enjoy it. Now,
Andrew has been telling me he's been enjoying.
No,
it.
No, I've
been
enjoying.
Oh, that's
stuff.
Great.
Yeah. So the thing is with the kids is basically. We had two kids home from summer camp. Peter and Dashiell are home. But now we have to drive from Colorado all the way to southern Missouri, right? It's so far south in Missouri that it's close to Arkansas.
Right.
Right? That's how far away it is.
Is it in the
Ozarks?
Jason Bateman and Laura Linney are hanging out there.
Oh, they're hanging out there by the pool?
Branson.
No,
it's Ozark.
It's Branson, Missouri.
It's Branson. That's literally the heart of the Ozarks.
Oh.
Yeah. So we got to drive there. So anyways, I basically I'm in class, and it's the first week too, so I don't want to just take off.
No, you can't.
Right? And, you know, and for me, for learning, I do focus on learning, right? I focus on it. I mean, I like learning.
You're doing it online though.
Yeah, online,
that
virtual.
That seems hard. Is that hard?
It is, and and what I'll tell you is I bought a second computer monitor because with the conference call, and we've got like...
So you can play your game and do the...
Yeah, hardly.
Defeat the dragon on one.
But we've got three or four different like documents open. We get documents and stuff.
What it sounds like when I call Andrew sometimes.
But there's just so much stuff that I need two monitors just so I can...
I get
you. I can keep everything.
I'm surprised you don't have two. A lot of people use two.
No, and I had two.
Oh, okay.
And I get rid of one, and then...
Now
you know,
you've got another one back.
So anyways...
Do you get rid of it or do you sell it?
I gave it, one of my kids took it. So anyways,
Peter or Dashiell for gaming.
Sure, yeah. And so,
makes sense.
So basically, Katie left Wednesday morning with Dashiell and Peter to drive to Missouri.
Wow.
Now,
to get MK.
Yeah, to get MK. Now I wanted to catch up with them. So what I did was I took a late flight that got into Kansas City around midnight. Right.
Wait, first, Andrew also called me. He's like, hey, Matt, what are you doing this afternoon?
Oh.
He was watching the pub. He's like, how'd you like to earn $50? I'm like, first of all, you don't have to pay me to take you to the airport. Second of all, I can't because I'm on puppy duty.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
you don't have to pay
me. I was feeling it. So anyways.
It's fine. It's fine.
It's very nice of you.
See, and I thought, like, I got a pretty good deal. I got $80 for the flight, right?
Whoa.
Not a bad deal, right? It's probably less than $80.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a good deal.
It was United Airlines.
I flew United out to Baltimore.
Oh, there are some good United deals. Yeah.
But here... I didn't pay for any upgrades for the seat.
Sure.
So
were you in the middle?
So me and the other passengers that were in like boarding group six. We called it the peasant class.
Yes.
Right? And not only did I have a middle seat, I was in the last row of the airplane.
By the bathrooms.
Brutal.
Yeah, by the bathrooms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brutal.
And so, like, that's where I was with the peasant class. Now, the thing is, I didn't pay for any upgrades, right? And I didn't need to bring any luggage.
No offense to any peasants listening
Katie,
to the show right now.
Yeah. Katie had all my luggage in the car.
Oh, that's kind of
so
nice.
So I just needed to get there.
Right.
So, but I go to check in. It's like, okay, you check in online.
Mm-hmm. I used the United app this whole weekend because I landed in Baltimore around midnight as well.
Yeah. So I got about four reminders from United. Please check in for your flight.
I did too.
But because I didn't pay for any upgrades, do they let me check in online?
Oh.
No, they do not.
Is that why?
That's why. And so then they're like,
yeah,
well,
I paid to choose my seat.
They're like, well, you have to get to the kiosk and you have to check in at the kiosk. So you check in at the kiosk and it's like, oh, you have to wait for an attendant because they want to come and inspect to make sure that my carry-on qualifies as a free carry-on.
Oh.
So that they can't charge for it. So that was a little annoying.
That's a lot annoying. Mm.
And then the other thing is, let's see, is the Uber ride on the way to the airport
mm-hmm.
was like $80 plus tip.
More than the flight.
More than the
Whoa.
Flight. And then,
isn't that funny?
And then the Uber ride from Kansas to the hotel was also north of $80.
Give me a break.
And the thing is, I had to do the same thing last year, and I probably spent about $30, $40 for the Uber ride, right? In a non-peak period, like $30 or $40 for the Uber ride. But, you know, and I don't know.
Oh, yeah. So what, Katie couldn't be bothered to come pick you up from the airport?
He arrived at midnight. She's got two kids.
To midnight. Okay. Yeah. I wasn't listening.
Yeah. And yeah. She had just driven. Okay. She had just driven 500 miles by herself.
Yeah. With the kids.
Yes.
Yeah,
so how much about that? How many times did she call you during that drive complaining about something?
Not really. Oh. Yeah.
The kids are, she had the two, I think that she had easy ones. Like they're going to be on their device, right?
Yeah, I mean, Dashiell they're on Peter. Their devices and stuff and helping watch out for stuff.
They're pretty easy.
So anyways, so, you know, I finally get there. Like, this is that we get there and, you know, and everything goes good. But of course, like, Mary-Kate, after being at camp for a month, is exhausted. She's sick.
Mm.
Oh.
I mean, it's just like...
She was really sick last year.
Yeah, and this year wasn't bad, but, you know, it's just the way...
And camps.
It's just the way it goes. So we are now all safely home.
Good.
We are all there as a family. I think the dogs are basically
relieved
because everybody's back home again.
Dogs like that.
And it's, you know, it's kind of a...
We got the pack back.
Business as usual. So it's the quiet before the storm.
What's the storm?
What's the storm?
Well, I mean, just get like back to school.
Back to school. Sorry, Dave. Shut your ears. Is around the corner.
I know. Trust me. I know.
Yeah.
Trust me. I know.
Yeah. Back to school, Dave. Don't shut your ears.
Now I think about it, I got schoolwork to do tonight.
Hmm.
Got to do some stuff for the theater. I got to rip some CDs.
So, and a little let's say a little teaser for the school year is the Dowd family is going to have to keep track of three different school systems and three different calendars.
Oh no!
Yeah,
people who have the three kids at some point. That is exactly what happens, and I don't
know.
Well,
it's Andrew's school district. And then Dashiell School District, and then Peter and Mary Kate School.
No, Peter and Mary Kate are in separate schools.
Same district.
The same district.
He's talking about three different calendars.
Oh, districts.
Douglas County, Littleton Public Schools.
Yeah, where are you going to be?
Probably Elizabeth.
Okay. Which is Doug County, right?
No, actually, I don't think it is. I don't think it's
Doug.
It's called the Front Range or something.
Oh, is it really?
And I don't actually know what county.
We don't know if it exists.
We don't know.
I don't know what county.
Oh, that's really funny.
Andrew's going to be taking a helicopter to work every morning.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm,
flying over the Front Range and dropping down right into the
like your Matt Lauer
plateau.
And Matt Lauer's glory days.
No, actually, I'm thinking about inventing like a go-go gadget helicopter.
Yes.
That's a good idea.
That's going to be me zipping to work in the morning.
All right. Well, we'll find out more about that in the fall. I'm really excited to hear. I can't wait for you to get into a classroom so we can... share notes, and we can find out all the times that Andrew's like, Matt, you're a teacher. You got it easy. Summer's off. Cannot wait. Cannot wait. All right. Well, let's get to it. Great guest for you this week, Lev Grossman. is on the show. Got a great new book out, The Bright Sword. And Laura, you want to tell us a little bit about this book?
Yeah, this is an absolutely fantastic addition to the canon. That is The Legend of King Arthur. I'm an Arthur fan. This book gave me what I wanted, and then some more. Yes. Like what I didn't even know I wanted, it gave me. So the story revolves around a young man named Colum who wants to be a knight. He travels on his own to Camelot, only to get there the day after Arthur has died. So not only is Arthur dead, but most of the other knights have also passed in a battle. And so what you have left are a quirky, oddball group of older knights who are in deep mourning for Arthur.
Oh, yeah.
But they're also not like Sir Galahad, Lancelot. They're not the knights that you necessarily... These are the secondary, yeah. Tertiary, really.
Oh,
the tertiary
knights. The lesser known knights.
Yeah, so this story actually really affected me. It has so much heart and adventure. And there's such a beautiful longing for what was that permeates this book. You know, the beautiful Empire of Camelot with paired with trying to figure out how does Britain move forward? Kind of how do you move forward after the fall of an empire, mm-hmm. or after your glory days are over, after the glory days are over. So this is a long book. It does not feel long. I will tell you that. There are quests, there are adventures, surprises, lots of magic. Love the magic. And there's so much heart. It's also funny. Which you don't always find in these types of books.
Right.
I loved it. I actually still think about this book, even though I finished it a while ago. I kind of took meaning from it with what we are, you know, potentially experiencing in our own country right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I took meaning from it in comfort in a way. So I really, I loved it. Yeah.
Awesome. Very good. And we loved our chat with Lev Grossman. So here now, talking about his book, Bright Sword. This is Lev Grossman.
I'm sorry, I just came back from a run, so this is about as unliterary as I look.
That's hilarious. Actually, usually when I'm doing these things, usually it's me who's just going for a run. So I completely understand. You gotta, yeah. I mean, that's the best way to.
And I'm used to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm used to the sweating and the.
And we can't smell you from here, so we don't have odorama, so you're good to go.
It's probably for the best.
How far was the run today?
It was a modest run. I'll be honest. I probably ran for somewhere between 2 and 3 miles, but I just had to get outside and clear my head a little bit.
You got to get out there.
You spend too much time inside.
Right now, but it's just got to be 95 degrees out there and humid. What are you doing out there running this time of day, Lev? Come on, man. You got to get up early and get out there.
They said I was crazy. It is incredibly hot and humid, but when you feel it calling to you, you have to go.
That's right.
Good. Good. And then congratulations. It looks like you got the TV rights sold.
Oh, how exciting. How exciting.
For this book, The Bright Sword.
You know, full disclosure, we made that deal, I think it was in November or December of last year. And then they swear you to a mighty oath of silence.
Wow.
Why? I don't know.
Wow.
Everyone's going to find out eventually. So I've known for a while.
But I see.
I think it's funny, actually. It was the first, this was before almost anybody had read it. What happens is that there are scouts whose job it is to get access to manuscripts before publication.
Okay.
Somebody somewhere in, I don't know, the mailroom of Random House or somewhere, maybe one of the foreign publishers we submitted to, grabbed a copy of it and then started circulating in Hollywood. And so suddenly, you know, it was on. And it was the first time, actually, the fact that somebody was willing to pay money for the screen rights was the first time I actually sort of thought, said, okay, maybe this is going to be okay. The book's going to be okay, you know, because you feel...
You don't know.
It was the first good sign that we had.
So, you got a New York Times, like, anticipated book of the summer, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely loved this book. I just realized I read it on the Kindle, so I didn't know how long it was. It does not read like it's 700 pages. It's amazing. The Bright Sword, it's character-rich, epic tale of quirky knights, faded empires, and just adventure stories for days. Absolutely, I loved it. I loved it. What inspired you to write? What inspired you to tackle Arthur? Also, I should tell you, Lev, we have a puppy, and this is the first podcast we have done with the puppy in the room.
So he's grabbing on every cord in sight and trying to drag it off the desk here. We'll be if we lose you.
What kind of puppy are we talking about?
Well, we'll show you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It makes me happy to hear you say that about the. Oh, look at that! Wow, that's the puppiest puppy I've ever.
He's a real puppy puppy. Yeah. But anyway, how did you? When were you like? I think I'm gonna tackle Arthur.
But it was, you know, I'd written the Magician's trilogy, mm-hmm. and then I was done, and I was sort of casting about to think about what I could do next, and I started thinking about Arthur, and it was more sort of like, you know, obviously I can't write about Arthur, but wouldn't it be amazing and fun if I did, because I had been so devoted to, well, especially the Once and Future King.
Yes, me too. Yeah.
But I sort of thought that's sort of the end of the line. Like, he's now said everything that we need to say about Arthur. And it was only when I went back and reread it that it made me start to think there are things in here that some things have changed since that book was written.
Yeah.
In 50s, I actually.
Yeah, I think so. I read it like 30 years ago, so I haven't reread it, so I don't know. It sounds like it didn't quite hold up.
Well, I feel like I want to be careful. It definitely held
okay.
up, but it had become a book of the past.
I understand what you're saying.
You know,
yeah.
A classic book that was in the past, but wasn't speaking directly to somehow this moment that we're in right now. And that made me think, Arthur sort of tends to transform from century to century, kind of the world in which he's appearing. And I sort of thought, what would it mean to write an Arthur that did feel like it belonged right now? Because Arthur, you know, it's a very old story. It's a very undiverse story. Mm. It took me a while to feel like there was a place for it or a way to tell it that felt fresh and urgent.
Yeah.
And it was probably thinking about, I think I was thinking about Game of Thrones. I'm a big fan of George R. Martin.
Yeah, and, me too.
Thinking about the way he told the story, which essentially begins with the death of a king.
Mm, you're right.
Sort of two kings, really, depending on how you do it. But it's about when the throne is empty and the kingdom starts falling apart. And you have a succession crisis and the world as you knew it sort of has lost its kind of its center. And on the one hand, I felt like I recognized that world, that sort of dislocated world. It felt very modern and very now.
It does.
And of course, I asked myself the question, how would the story go if instead of Robert Baratheon, that's the king that died? What if it was King Arthur?
Spoiler alert. Goodness gracious.
Arthur that died.
Yeah.
And that sent me down a whole bunch of interesting rabbit holes. But I underestimated how much it would challenge me. Because it took me about 10 years to finish this book. I didn't think that was going to happen.
I can see that with this book. I don't know how you did it. Clearly you're an incredibly talented writer, but at the same time, you're dealing with Arthur, who's been around, I think, since the 6th century, the legend of King Arthur, perhaps mentioned, but who knows when. Like, it's kind of, it's just something else to tackle. It was just really impressive. Very, very impressive.
Mm-hmm. And then just seeing Camelot and when you described the round table for the first time with Colm, your young hero, just absolutely magnificent. The description of the round table, oak, 100 feet. I mean, I wanted to invest in something, but nothing like a good oak table. You know, if you're going to have a round table, let's build it out of oak for good, a nice, honest wood to see it 100 nights.
I feel like... Yeah. Feel like it would have been maybe a little bit sticky, like the, you know, there's a lot of drinking going on at the round table.
Just a little.
It's sort of vast and glorious, but maybe needs just a quick wipe down.
A little meat eating.
Not a lot of. Yeah. I don't know how much polyurethane they had back then. Well,
that was part of it for me too. Was that I felt as though we had been having a lot of very kind of hard boiled Arthurs, and I don't say that in a critical way, but writers like Bernard Cornwell, who I venerate, would take Arthur and really bring him back to his roots as a Dark Ages warlord down in the mud, you know, really minimizing the kind of magic and the romance of it. And I love that. And I also found myself kind of longing more for the kind of Camelot Arthur.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you have the soaring spires and the shining armor and the magic and all that stuff. So I sort of leaned into that side of it. I remember reading how when Aaron Sorkin redid the book of Camelot, when they relaunched it on Broadway, he took out all the magic. He took out all the references to it, which is, that's definitely a take, but I thought, okay, if he's going to go that way, I'll go the other way.
There you go. Double down.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. That's what we want. For
we do
sakes.
Want that.
We want the magic.
I also like it was very character driven. I loved the characters in this book. I loved them so much. I found their stories just really moving. Most of them are, and I'm going to quote you. I'd like to quote you, authors back to them.
Arthur.
Mismatched background players, which I thought, what a wonderful way to describe them. And they're knights that are left after the heroes with a capital H, have gone. Did these knights, they felt fully formed people to me. Did they come to you fully formed? Was it something that you're like, oh, I should add this to their backstory? Like, did they feel like they came on? I guess it took 10 years, so maybe they didn't.
It's funny. Some did and some didn't.
Okay, yeah.
You know, Sir Dagonet, I felt like I knew already.
The Fool.
And Sir Palamides. I love Palamides, and when I thought about him coming from kind of Golden Age Baghdad.
Yeah.
And the idea that he'd be coming from this civilization, which is actually advanced kind of far beyond what is going on in Britain. And everyone looks like a savage to him.
Yes.
He suddenly became a lot clearer to me. But others took a long time to sort of speak to me. Dinadan, in the books, very minor character, but he's a wit. So whenever anybody gets off a good line, it tends to be Dinadan. And it made me, it was a while before I sort of felt like something's driving this. Dinadan is defending something, you know, with all these jokes that he makes. The idea that he was born a woman. Suddenly it came to me, and it came to me also that it was a story that hadn't really been told before. Mm-hmm. And you so often hear stories about...
you do.
Yes,
you
absolutely.
Warriors who turned out to be women.
Mm-hmm.
Surely there was one on the round table.
It was very believable to me.
That's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I think that's very important now, especially, you know, I'm a high school teacher, so I see it. I mean, we talk about it a lot more, and it's more out in the open right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not... We encourage all this, and you have so many... You have these gay and trans characters in here, and you just represent them with such compassion and love. It clearly was important for you to include that in here. And you know, well
I should
done.
Probably, to full disclosure, my son is trans.
Excellent.
He actually came out to me midway through the writing of The Bright Sword. I've been writing it so long. My kids grew up while I was writing it.
Wow.
He's yeah. in college now, but he actually is transitioning. And becoming a trans man, and so that whole world, which I'll admit I never thought about that much before, suddenly became very real and close to me.
Yeah.
I hope you gave those pages of the manuscript to him and had a little fact checking, make sure you're doing everything carefully.
It's actually quite fascinating. The stuff that I got wrong.
Because he did read it.
I bet.
Very good. Carefully and. Yeah. I think on the whole that he liked it, but there were moments that I had to there are things I had to redo. For example, there's a fairy whose name is John Punch, and he is the one that Dinadan summons, who sort of starts everything off for him. And I had thought of John Punch as a little bit seedy, maybe a bit of a gray kind of character, maybe not all that appealing. And I gave the chapter to Ross, and then he came back and said, you have to understand how important John Punch is.
Wow.
Because he's the first person who looks at Dinadan and sees him, sees what's going on with him. No one else had ever done that. And I want to tell you, I love John Punch. He's my favorite character in the entire book. And you've got to make him a little bit nicer and treat him a little bit nicer, because he's actually one of the good guys, and you don't really realize it. And I hadn't really thought of it that way at all. So anyway, things like that that I needed him to point out to me.
That's awesome.
That's really good.
Did you say, it's so much more fun to write bad guys? Okay, so just let Dad do his writing. No, I'm just kidding.
I do. One of my favorite knights was, you'd mentioned his name, I'll probably butcher it, but Palamedes? But you said Palamedes. How do you pronounce it?
I have no idea.
Okay. I'm going to pronounce it.
Palamedes, but
I know. I was figuring I'd get that answer from you. In my head, the whole book, I did read Palamedes.
Which you may be right. I think it's a Greek name, but I actually don't know.
Yeah, I didn't know either. But I loved that you made him a prince from Baghdad, which was a glorious empire that he came from, and he was really slumming it as a knight in Arthur's court. And then, like, he gets disappointed when he gets to Britain because he's disappointed that Britain hadn't discovered paper yet, and like things like that. That I was like, oh. The British Empire, and then like you're mentioning the Roman Empire too, which had, you know, gone downhill, and was gone. But I feel like recently gone, and like they had heated floors, which I forget that like I think the Greeks might have invented that. But it's so wild to think about these empires of their past glory.
And it would have been wild. I mean, it's a sort of post-apocalyptic world that they're in.
Yeah, it is.
It's like I Am Legend, yeah. You know, all the ruins all around them of this more advanced society that has crashed, and you know they're using coins, but they don't know how to mint coins.
Yeah.
They're just using the old coins from the empire. They're using the old pottery because they actually don't know how to do pottery with a wheel. It is a weird factoid that no stone was quarried in Britain for 300 years after the Romans left, and it's because all they did was just take the old stone from the Roman buildings. The Romans had a technique for carving stone that the Brits couldn't do, so they just would take the old stone.
I mean, makes sense.
Repurpose it. which is fair, but it's just so funny to think of them living amid the ruins of this great empire.
It is, but it's very fitting because, you know, when Colum gets there, Arthur has just died, and the Camelot is at the end. You know, you have a battle scene in here. Which, you know, it did have Games of Thrones-y feel to me. It was absolutely incredible. There's a rebel army that's coming in. I was holding my breath. I could see it, feel it, smell it, hear it. It was absolutely thrilling to read. Like, so thrilling. Like, I might even go back and reread the battle scene. Was it as fun to write as it was to read? Because it was awesome.
You know, it's funny. I liked that scene a lot, and at the same time, I'm a peaceful man. I'm a man of peace myself. I've never actually been in a pitch battle, and I spent a lot of time reading accounts of first-person accounts of combat, not just in the medieval, actually, but people in Vietnam, people in the kinds of combat situations which become like chaotic in that way. And I spent a lot of time just thinking, which way does he turn?
Yeah.
And what does he, you know, everyone, people aren't really wearing uniforms, but the other side has uniforms, mm-hmm. but the Camelot side, everyone's just wearing their clothes that they woke up in. And so it becomes very chaotic really fast. And not how I think Colum imagined it was going to be.
Yeah.
I thought about it a lot. I reread Tolstoy. His battle scenes are incredibly good. His sort of Napoleonic battles. He conveys that fog of war really well.
Yeah. I mean,
anyway, I spend a lot of time on that battle scene.
I can tell it was beautifully done. And just even the start, which when you said, yeah, because the noticing like the butterflies and the flowers that are going to be destroyed and they don't know, you know, just the beginning parts of it, like where you like take your mind out of the battle is so good. It's really, really
so,
good.
So you just picture them standing there. Yes. Because they would stand there and they would eye each other. It happened at the Battle of Hastings. What are they thinking? You know, how do they feel? They know what's going to happen, but they don't know quite when or how.
Yeah.
Did you ever think about calling it, because it went from Camelot to Camel, you know, Little. Maybe in the second edition you can change that. You're welcome. You can.
The hack jokes we're here to provide.
Well, my mind always goes to the humor, and there's a lot. I love how you have the humor in here, but how many times did you? My research would have just been watching the Holy Grail over and over again. How many times did you?
Or did you watch Merlin also? We're big fans of Merlin.
We have a kid, so growing up, it was something we could all watch together. Great, loved that show.
Yeah.
Monty Python on the Holy Grail. When you're doing a take on King Arthur, it's actually quite hard to think of something that they didn't think of.
First of all,
they seem to have they knew their history. I don't know which of them had studied history, but they knew it quite well, and their eye for what was absurd about it, or what would it seem absurd to the modern eye, was so acute that I often found myself thinking, they did that, so I'm going to leave it alone. Which is actually why I didn't watch Merlin. Even though
smart.
I was very aware
of it. Smart.
So active.
Well, you have a dark Merlin in here, so it's very different from the Merlin in.
My Merlin is nowhere.
He's
sure
nasty.
Which is a shame.
Yeah.
Did that Merlin come from other legends, or was that your own choosing to make him go a little dark? We like it dark.
I'll tell you where it came from. C.S. Lewis. Writer of whom I'm very fond, was a big King Arthur person. And he used Merlin as a character in, I think it was That Hideous Strength, one of his science fiction novels. But there's a little sort of mini essay about Merlin, and it talks about how, who was Merlin? He must have been a druid. He must have been somebody who practiced the kind of indigenous magic of Britain. And yet, this was after all the druids had been wiped out. And so, first of all, how did he survive? What did he do to save his life when everyone around him died? Maybe he did things that weren't so great. Why is he serving at the court of a Christian king? Surely his interests don't necessarily completely align with Arthur's, and he's somehow suiting himself. He became a very sort of someone who'd lost his soul. And become quite mercenary, someone who sort of lived too long. And then the other thing about it is, in the actual canon, he doesn't treat women very well. There's a couple of moments where he very much enables Uther with Igraine, and then there's the whole business of his apprentice, which I didn't alter in the slightest. In the canon, he becomes infatuated with his apprentice and bothers her.
I did not know that.
On her so persistently that they have a fight and she wins. And if you read Mallory, it becomes, and or even T.H. White, it's her fault. With her wiles, she seduced Merlin, and stole his secrets and then imprisoned him. But I think it was more of a Me Too story. I think that Merlin had a little bit of a problem, and he got what was coming to him.
Interesting.
Yeah. How much time did you spend doing research before? Like, did you plunge in? Did you do research? And did you be like, I gotta stop?
it was a lot.
Yeah.
I had never written what amounts to historical fiction before. In the Magician's books. Research meant just making it up.
A little easier.
Have to conform to reality. Whereas with Arthur, I'm not I was not a medievalist or historian by any stretch, and so I had everything left to learn about that world. It took me a long time, and it took me a long time also because novelists want different things out of history than historians do.
Hmm.
You're always looking for those little details of daily life,
right?
Where historians quite rightly are looking for a bigger picture,
yeah,
causality, things like that. But there's a moment, for example, when Colum is living at Lord Alistair's hall, and he has to sleep in the great hall with the other servants because the other servants didn't get private rooms; they just had to sleep on the floor. And I remember reading that pillows were a late medieval invention. They didn't have pillows back in the early days. And so when you lay down to sleep, you would rest your head on a log. And I sort of thought,
no thanks.
Suddenly, after someone lying there with their head propped up on a log, and how uncomfortable it would have been. It made it feel very real to me, but I really had to dig for those details. They were hard to find.
Yeah, you want to get the north side of the the tree where the moss side.
Goes. Yeah, yeah.
The mossy side.
You really would want the mossy side.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Levis, time now for our segment we call Quick Six. These are six quick questions in which we find out just a little bit more about you. Here we go.
You can take a sip of that coffee.
Drink your
tea, coffee.
You're supposed to drink the coffee before the run, but that's okay. All right. What is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
Wait, sorry, say it again.
Or what is the last show you watched or binged and really enjoyed?
I think it was Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Donald Glover. Childish Gambino.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, I think that was. I'm a big sucker for a spy thriller. I always wanted to write one, but I never have.
Oh wow!
Times a fleeting. Let's go. Yeah. Come on, Lev.
Well, this one may be obvious. We ask it to all of our authors, but what fictional world or place would you like to visit?
My mind immediately goes to, I don't know if you know Ian Banks at all. Science fiction writer, Scottish science fiction.
Yeah.
He was a far, far future writer, and he had this world called The Culture, where basically almost everything was possible. And life is good in The Culture.
Humans
found ways to mess it up, but I still would like to go there.
Oh, that's
in a while.
That's awesome. Cats, I've only read one of his books. I should go back and look at other stuff.
How about this, Lev? Give us one of your favorite movies of all time.
Favorite movies of all time. I've got to say Brazil. I just rewatched it.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember watching it in high school and just feeling like my head had been taken apart and put together again slightly differently. I've always loved that movie, and I still do. It's still so powerful and weird.
Yeah, it was kind of groundbreaking back in the time. Speaking of Monty Python, it was such a good... Terry,
Terry.
Terry Gilliam.
Yeah, Terry Gilliam. That's right. Yeah. That's right. How about one of your favorite books?
Favorite books. Another of my lifelong obsessions I just reread. It was actually by Philip K. Dick. My favorite of his novels is called Ubik, which is probably the one of his masterpieces that has never been adapted for film, and so is less well known. I think it's a greater book than Scanner Darkly.
Whoa! Big words, Lev. Big words. A big proclamation.
Okay. We're asking the tough questions here.
I know, real tough.
The tough answers. That's true. These are the hard-hitting questions.
I recommend a Ubik to everybody. And again, you will feel slightly differently when you finish it than when you started.
I have to go read that.
Sounds good. How about this, Lev? Speaking of hard-hitting questions, do you have a go-to karaoke song?
Oh, wow. It used to be, and I feel like I don't know how well this has aged. You Belong to Me, the Taylor Swift song.
That's awesome.
Yeah, there you go.
Love that. Yeah.
I don't sound much like Taylor Swift. I only have a range of one octave with my voice. It's relatively low.
Yeah.
But you know what? I do my best with it. I'm deeply attached to that song.
That's a good one.
That has aged just fine.
Yeah, it's aged really well. Yeah, you're talking to some Swifties here.
That's right.
Last but not least, what book are you currently reading?
I'm in the middle of a book that came out last year. So I'm about to go on tour.
Yes.
Yeah.
On the tour, I'll sort of each place I stop, I will have a sort of conversation on stage with a different author. Mm-hmm. And the first one is Ed Park, who wrote a book called Same Bed, Different Dreams, which was a finalist for the Pulitzers here. It is a sort of Pynchonian phantasmagoria about, of all things, Korean history.
Wow.
I'm learning a lot. And he sort of, he does this thing that I could never do, which is just weave together many, many different stories in different time periods so that they form a kind of thematic whole. It's quite amazing. I'm halfway through, and I don't know how he's going to bring it in for landing, but I am 100% confident that he is going to. And it's funny and sad and really smart. And I read somewhere that it took him 15 years to
There you go. You're not the only slow writer. Okay.
Blazingly fast.
You've got that over him then when you do that conversation. I like that.
That's right. Hold that over.
I loved your book. I'm a melancholy. I like melancholy. There is tinges of melancholy in this book that just satisfy my sad soul. I loved it so much. But there's humor, adventure.
Humor, all you want.
It's fantastic.
Everything you want.
It's fantastic.
700 pages of
And goodness. I love Arthur. Love right. your Arthur.
Yes.
Yeah. So thank you.
Here, I'm so glad. It makes me so happy to hear that. It was a long road.
I bet. I bet. Yeah. Congratulations.
Very good.
Yeah. Have fun on your tour. Thank you.
I will. Thank you. This was so super fun. I'll be back here with my spy thriller as soon as I can.
Yes.
Oh, I'd love it.
Let's not wait 10 more years for that one, for God's sake.
Exactly. Okay. That's the 10 years.
That's a 5-year. It's a 5-year book.
Yeah.
I feel I can do it.
Three.
Knock it out in 3.5. All right, love. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
The Inside Flap. All right, there you go. Thank you so much to Lev Grossman for hopping on. And check out that book, The Bright Sword. All right, let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
And let's start with
Laura Medicus.
She comes from Silver Spoon, Golden Rule, private school, never miss Sunday church.
I swear, he never...
Sunday church.
It sounds like he's saying never missed honey church.
Oh, that's really funny. I heard it the first time I heard it.
I don't hear
we're
it.
Gonna, let's play it one more time.
She comes from Silver Spoon,
Golden Rule, private school, never miss Sunday church.
Sunday church.
Andrew?
Yeah, Sunday church.
Sunday church.
So what happens is he's singing it. Like the way he's singing it.
Right. No, I know he's giving a little...
He doesn't really pronounce the
And there's S's. There's a country twang there, too.
Honey Church.
All right. So my book this week is called Lenny Marks Gets Away with Murder. And it's by Karen Main. And Karen is spelled K-E-R-R-Y-N. This book is so good. I could not put this book down. I read it almost straight through. I started it before the flight... And I finished it on the flight right when we were touching down in Baltimore.
Well, it's a fairly long flight.
It is a long flight. It was a
four hours.
A really long flight. But that's good.
I
loved this book.
Anytime you can find a book that keeps you riveted on a plane,
it was absolutely gripping. And a minor complaint about planes, because I did pay to get the aisle seat going and coming, because I don't want to be trapped with weirdos
by the window. I was worried on a long flight having to use the bathroom. And if
that's what I was worried about.
Or gal on the aisle.
If they
go to sleep, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You're screwed.
Yeah.
You don't want to wake them up.
Just as a woman, you don't want to be trapped in that corner. I think it's a good policy. Get on the aisle.
Yeah.
So
worth it to pay
But here's the thing. Everyone around me had closed their blinds. So it was 4 hours of just being in a... Like soda can is what it felt like.
Yeah.
Because I like to be able to see out a little bit.
Yeah, get a little natural.
Even though
light
I can't, yeah, I wanted that. I missed that. And the way back was very
similar. Because everyone's watching their little movies on their phones or devices.
Yeah, they dim the lights too. Like, I don't know. Like we were all puppies and they could maybe get us to calm down and go to sleep with the lights down. Anyway, the heroine of this book is named Lenny Marks in the title. She is a neurodivergent youngish woman, I'm guessing probably late 20s, early 30s. And the story is told through her point of view, which I loved. So she teaches fifth grade at a private school. She lives alone and she she has a certain time that she likes to do things. certain days she does them on. She eats the same thing on a certain day. She really likes her routine. She plays Scrabble. Speaking of Scrabble, Lenny plays Scrabble every night against an imaginary opponent named Monica. And it is Monica from Friends that she also watches.
I was just
going to
say, there's
night.
Only two Monicas I know. It's Monica Lewinsky or Monica from Friends.
And she will move seats, which is what I used to do as an only child.
Oh.
I would play games with my stuffed animals.
And
I would move with the games. Yep, and then I would wildly cheat to let the stuffed animal that I liked the best
absolutely.
Win.
Yeah. You got to do that.
Shout out to Frosty. So.
The snowman or the cat?
The teddy bear.
The teddy, of course.
Yeah. So she also appears to have difficulty reading social cues, you know, and understanding if someone's having fun at her expense or if they're genuine. So these aspects of Lenny, it's written with extreme sensitivity, but also humor. And at first you're like, okay, it's another book about a neurodivergent person, which I sometimes will go through a thing where I feel like it's every book
so
I'm reading.
It seems to be a proportionate number.
It does. However, it changes. So she gets a letter in the mail one day. She does not open it. The return address is from a parole board, and it really bothers her. This letter gets under her skin. Things kind of start to go off the rails for Lenny after this. Family services person starts leaving her messages to get in touch, and the reader starts to realize that Lenny has a very traumatic past that she may not even remember all of. For instance, she knows something happened to her mother when she was 11. She doesn't understand or remember what it was. And we realize that someone from her past is coming up for parole, and that slowly unfolds as well. The criticism that I've seen about this book is that it looks like it's a cozy mystery, and even the cutesy title with Lenny Marks, Gets Away with Murder. This is not a cozy. There's some really sad emotional stuff in here. I did not cry on the plane, but I had damp eyes is what I'll say. But it's balanced so well with funny, interesting, and just a really sweet main character. This is a heartwarming story. There's a little romance added. I really liked. Humor is great. There's suspense. Just, it's really well done. It's a first novel by an Australian author, and it came out last year.
Oh, wow. Very
it's
good.
It's very good. It's just a quick, engaging read, and it's called Lenny Marks Gets Away with Murder.
Yeah, looks great. Over 4 stars on Goodreads.
Yeah, it's so enjoyable.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, that is recommended by...
Laura Medicus.
In my book...
Dave Medicus.
It's a bonfire. Turn the lights out. I'm burning everything you love.
Is called Here and Gone, H-E-R-E, Here and Gone by Helen Beck. And Helen Beck is actually a pseudonym for Irish writer Stuart Neville, who is an Edgar-nominated author of The Ghosts of Belfast.
I've read a Stuart Neville.
He's a very popular
author. He can be disturbing.
And there are bits of this that are disturbing and well. This is a psychological thriller, exciting, twisty mystery thriller from 2017. I really enjoyed a story about a woman named Audra. Now,
I'm thinking of Adam Neville, a horror writer, I believe.
He writes really disturbing stuff. I've read Adam Neville
well. All good. Sorry.
And not to be confused with the Neville brothers.
We're Adam
Andrew,
Nevilles.
I know you're going to.
You're King of the Nevilles.
King of the Nevilles. Okay. So this is. Helen Beck.
Never mind.
There's a woman named Audra. Now, Audra's driving to California from Arizona. Speaking of driving long distances with kids, she's got her two kids with her, an 11-year-old son and 3-year-old daughter. She is trying to get away from her husband, her abusive husband, and she wants to start a new life for herself. So she's getting out of town, not waiting for any divorce to get finalized, not even waiting for... to find out about child support, just getting away from the husband. The kind of touch-and-go situation. She's got a friend in California. She's going to go see them. Suddenly, she's pulled over by a cop. And this is where her real nightmare begins. She's arrested for having a bag of weed in the car. A bag of weed that she is certain was planted there because she does not smoke weed anymore. The nightmare gets even worse for her when her children, now their children not only taken away from her when she's arrested, but the cops begin claiming that there were never any kids in the car.
Oh, I just got a chill.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a chill.
Yep, and now this is not one of those unreliable narrator novels either. The kids were there.
Oh, this is creepy.
The cops are saying there were no kids there at all.
Good grief.
And what do you think? Because she has kind of a checkered past, people are believing the cops.
Sure.
So this is just a nightmare that keeps getting worse and worse for Audra as no one believes her claims that the cops are lying, and she grows more and more frantic and desperate to find her kids. I bought into this book from page one, was completely hooked, and couldn't stop until I found out what happened. There's a woman who is extremely sympathetic, and we can't help but feel just the outrage that she's feeling about her situation. Real edge-of-your-seat, tense stuff here as you see what the kids go through as well. Terrifically a gripping thriller. Check it out. You won't be disappointed. Yes.
Yeah. And without a doubt, setting this in the 90s makes a difference just because these days there's so many cameras.
Right, exactly.
There's
so
many digital footprints.
Yeah. Right.
An 11-year-old probably has, you know, a phone or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, just the digital footprints these days are everywhere.
On that note, so at Denver, I didn't see it in Baltimore, but I've seen it twice now in Denver. You know, now they face scan you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You can opt out, though.
Right. You can, yeah.
So we had someone opting out when we flew to Canada, and then I had someone opting out when I was flying to Baltimore.
Right.
Literally, they're opting out of the face camera.
Meanwhile,
there's cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
I can see at least two aimed at them right there.
Yeah. And the guy, I remember when we were in Canada, the guy turned to me as another one opted out. And they went by, and we were next up, and he looks at me, he's like, yeah, they're opting out of this. Meanwhile, there are, and even the guys, like, pointing, cameras everywhere.
Did you see anyone opt out?
I haven't.
It's annoying because it slows you down.
But the point of that, it's like, because you don't have a driver's license, you don't have a passport. The government doesn't have, like, 50 gazillion
pictures
of you online.
It makes no sense.
So true.
You know, because you don't have social media.
I was just going to say, you know they have social media.
You know, it's just like,
I
don't know. It's just.
Don't understand it.
And
really.
I could get it if somebody's opting out of going through the machine or going through the scanner.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
But this is a camera.
It's different. I would agree with you. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. But that boggled my mind. Mm-hmm. And then I had a German family behind the woman who was opting out because it slows everything down.
It slows everything.
TSA agent has to call another higher up TSA agent.
Yep.
And the German family was like, can we get by? We're running late for our international flight. And he's like, I'm so sorry. No.
Oh, man. Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Hold your horses, Heidi.
Yes, exactly. Wow. Heidi and Franz.
Wow. All right, Andrew, what do you got for us this week?
Oh, wait. Oh, you need your Andrew's music.
Andrew Dowd. This
bed is on fire. So it's ironic. This is my theme song. Because the first book, which I'm not going to name, is I started reading a book that I spent a lot of time reading this book.
Uh-oh.
And it started out good.
Yeah.
And it was a space opera, right? And then it got to the point where, and this is a book where they have an AI, but the AI actually forms a relationship with one of the characters of the book.
Yeah.
And then where the book goes off the rails is all of a sudden everybody's having relations with each other.
Oh, no.
The AI is having relationships with everything, right?
It's too much.
And it gets to the point that this person's having relations and that person, I mean... It's, you know, and it's like, can we get on with the story? And then I read a little bit more thinking, oh, we're finally getting on with the story. No, we aren't. Everybody's jumping back in bed with somebody else. You know, and it's just like,
oh, man,
you know, but and a little bit of that stuff's one thing.
Yeah, I agree. A little's fine.
And you know, and this book had like a 4+, you know, a 4+ Goodreads review.
Oh, some
really?
People love that kind of stuff.
That's true. People do love that.
Yeah, some people do.
Yeah. Well, so I stopped reading that book. So the book I'm reviewing this
week. I think there's a time and place for that kind of book.
No, but it's like, they just couldn't get on with the damn plot. I mean, seriously. So, you know, so the inside flap book guarantee, I'm not recommending that book. Okay, I am recommending the book called Sunken Spaceship, written by Anthony J. Melchiori, M-E-L-C-H-I-O-R-R-I. Now, Anthony, basically, because I'm not going to pronounce that last name more often than I need to, Anthony J., he basically has a PhD from the University of Maryland.
Go Terps.
So brilliant, you know, a brilliant, and he like would 3D print body parts and stuff like that. I mean, so this guy is brilliant.
Yeah.
But he's living in Colorado now.
Oh, that's cool.
Now, I didn't research to see exactly where in Colorado, but he's actually moving to Colorado. So we all have Maryland ties.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I have 2 degrees from, you know, University of Maryland schools. Dave has at least...
I have a degree from a Maryland school.
Yeah, so we all have ties, but...
I do not, but I grew up there.
But you grew up there.
Yeah.
I have a degree from Camden Yards.
Yeah. So in any case, this is a space opera, and I almost think this should be like a new subgenre of space opera, which is the pay-as-you-go space travel, right? Because I've reviewed a number of books, and the plot is essentially, okay, you've got a spaceship, but you've got to earn enough money to keep that damn thing flying. Right?
Yes.
And this is one of those books, right? I wouldn't say it's not straightforward one of those books, but it's one of those books. So anyways, the main character in this book is Griffin. He goes by Finn for short. He is a ex-paratrooper turned biologist, like marine biologist. And the book opens, he's on the beach, he's in South Africa, and him and his trusty dog, Jacques, yes, as golden retriever, as in Jacques Cousteau.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
Right?
Cute. That's cute.
Basically, Jacques guarding the Jeep on the beach while Griffin, or Finn, is free diving, and he is basically studying an octopus. And, of course, he makes the connection to My Octopus Teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a famous documentary, and I think he kind of hates that documentary, but he's kind of doing the same thing. And there's a lot of detail in terms of him diving and everything, and he really just paints a beautiful scene of, you know, free diving, you know, off the South African coast with the kelp and all the different creatures and things like that. So he really does a great job with it. The beginning of the book, and you wonder about the author, like what experience do they have that they can describe the free diving just as you know in as much detail as they do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, something has to happen.
Sure, something's got to happen.
So, of course, there's like a giant crash or explosion. Now, does Finn know that a spaceship has crashed? No, he does not. But eventually he realizes, oh, it's a spaceship has crashed. He finds it spaceship, but he doesn't realize that it's a spaceship. He just sees something crashed. It's underwater. I mean, you know, things are dark underwater. You know, you can't see, you know, all too well. But of course, something dangerous escapes from the crashed spaceship.
Good.
And so he and Jacques end up in a life and death struggle with this alien creature, right? And he doesn't know that it's an alien. He thinks it's an odd creature. He doesn't know exactly what it is. And then, of course, then the Space Rangers show up. Now, the Space Rangers are alien Space Rangers, and they show up because it isn't, in fact, a dangerous creature. It's just a scared creature.
Oh, okay. Which can be dangerous.
Who feels threatened. He's only dangerous because he feels threatened.
Yeah.
And the Space Rangers, basically, they come in and they kind of like control the situation. And so what Finn thought was a life-threatening situation becomes diffused.
Mm-hmm.
But it is really more of a real life-threatening situation because the Rangers are like, well, now you know too much. So we basically, you have two choices. We can either kill you. We can either like laser your brain or put you to work. You know, it's probably not a tough choice.
Yeah.
So he decides to basically become a sort of a ranger cadet. And it turns out that the reason that the spaceship crashed is basically because something killed the pilot. And the other Ranger pilot, he was a little bit, he was shady. He was shady. He didn't take good care of his spaceship. And because he did shady things, he also relocated the ship's AI into a part of the ship where the AI could not, so he couldn't really see or manage the spaceship too well.
Hmm.
Right? So there's a mystery as to what killed the pilot. But Finn gets to take over this spaceship, but he has to continue the mission. And he basically has to deliver to the other side of the galaxy this creature that he thought was going to harm him. He has to safely deliver him to, like, the other part of the galaxy. Now, there's a lot of humor in this book. There's a lot of detail in this book. Now, of course, the AI is sort of a large plant that looks like a large, maybe man-eating plant.
Wow.
Oh, like a Little Shop of Horrors.
That's right. And, yeah, guess, okay. And guess what he decides to name the AI?
Audrey.
Audrey.
Audrey 2.
So he names Audrey. So Audrey has...
Maybe Audrey 3.
Yeah. And Jacques, of course, likes to... Audrey is severely dehydrated, so Jacques is doing his part to help hydrate Audrey.
Sure, yeah.
Right? So Jacques is the dog. You get it?
Yes.
And it does get to a certain point in the book and where Audrey is now hydrated, and she's like, you know, you can tell Jacques he doesn't have to assist me in staying hydrated anymore.
That's fine.
Then there's also a character named Renata in this book.
Oh, really?
Oh, yep. Shout out Renata.
Hey.
And Renata is a kick-ass human, like, ex-military type.
Wow.
Who is trying to, she has a game preserve on this, you know, foreign planet, and she's trying to keep poachers from basically attacking the animals. And so Finn and Renata basically form a reluctant team. But they both do have the goal is they really want to stop the poachers. Mm. But you know, this is an enjoyable read. It's 440 pages.
Oh, that's not bad.
Oh wow, that's not bad for one of your books.
You can really sink your teeth into this.
I can't even play this clip.
It's a lot of words.
Yeah, it is a lot of words. But there's a lot of humor in the book. There's, you know, it is written differently. It's not exactly what you would expect. Mm. You know, and so the book is called Sunken Spaceship, and I do have one critique.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Oh.
And the critique is, it's the name of the book, Sunken Spaceship, right? I mean, it's a crash spaceship. It isn't really, like, sunken. You think of something that's been there forever.
Under the ocean, yeah.
But you just don't get an accurate connotation from Sunken Spaceship. Now, did it get me to pull the book off the shelf and start reading it?
Yes.
Yes, it did. So it is an effective title? Yes.
But it's not accurate.
You didn't pull it off no shelf.
Well, the virtual shelf.
Well, and also a lot of times, you know, authors don't have any say in what the title is going to be.
Yeah. Well, I think independent author.
Oh, he's
probably did choose.
But I think the title's a little bit misleading. But, you know, I can't argue that the title isn't effective. So Sunken Spaceship by Anthony J. Melchiori.
Hmm.
All right, and that's also not to be confused with Scooby-Doo and the Sunken Ship, as I just accidentally looked up Sunken Ship instead of Sunken Spaceship. All right, let's get on with it.
Time for the audio book of the week.
And my pick this week is another, I think it was last summer when I brought you Rob Lowe's first book, which was titled, what was it? Stories I Tell My Friends, something like that. I don't know. Now I bring you Rob Lowe's.
Something like that.
I enjoyed it so much that I found his other book, which is also a pseudo-memoir, stories from his life, and it is called Love Life, and it is also narrated by the great Rob Lowe. Cool. I don't throw that term, adjective around loosely.
I would
the
agree
great
with you.
Rob Lowe. And from what I can tell, and I did a little Googling, he didn't use a ghostwriter.
I was wondering that.
He insisted. In fact, he was going to write his first book when the actor strike was going on way back when, and he had time. He insisted on not having a ghostwriter, but then he had to go back to work, so the book was put on hold. But from what I can tell, no ghostwriter used in this book.
He's like a type A type of guy.
He is, yeah. You can't...
I bet he was, in high school, I would imagine he was near to a straight A student.
He was a very good student, yes. Yeah. He was a very good student in high school. And he talks about that in the book. And he also talks about in this book. A lot of fun stories from his life. You get a lot of fun celebrity stories. Like he talks about what it's like to act with Tom Sizemore when he was at the height. In fact, Rob Lowe dropped Tom Sizemore off at rehab. Oof. The Rob Lowe guy has been in rehab himself. Dropped Tom Sizemore off at rehab after working with him. He tells a hilarious story about Jewel. They were filming a scene in a TV show they were in together, and they had to have like a scene where they were making out. Jewel did not want. Can you imagine this? Did not want. Now her boyfriend was on set, so maybe that had something to do with it.
Oh, that
but
definitely
did
does.
Not want to make out with Rob Lowe. I mean,
did Rob Lowe find that outrageous?
Nah, he would. You know, Rob Lowe. You know, he was laughing about it. And
clearly, Jewel was not a professional.
No, not a professional. He got her for the show. And then he tells this other story. He was in the room when Arnold Schwarzenegger accepted, or when he found out he was going to be governor of California. Mm-hmm. And when he took the phone call from the concession phone call from outgoing governor, and what it was like being in that room, and Rob Lowe, and there's something he touches on a lot in this book, he studies these moments. It's almost like he leaves his body and he watches these moments and he studies them because he might have to use that while acting. And later on he played a politician and he did have to use that when in his acting life. So he just studies life moments. He's just a really smart guy. But a lot of stories about his life. I cried while listening to this book.
Wow.
Because he tells a very touching story about dropping his kid off at college. And here we are 1 month away from dropping, Sophie off. And he was a mess when he had to drop off his son. He tells a very funny story about dressing up as Bigfoot to scare his kids. Just so many great stories. Really just an affirmation of life. The story, the name of the book is Love Life, and he really means that as he's right. You know, he turned down the role of McDreamy. He could have played McDreamy.
Huh.
Instead it went to Patrick Dempsey.
Yeah.
And he took on some role of a failed sitcom.
Yeah.
But then he talked about if it wasn't for that, he would have never gotten Parks and Rec.
That's true.
Literally never would have gotten that part. So, you know, he's got a great outlook on life and just a great book. Let's take a listen to a clip. This is Love Life by Rob Lowe. Read by Rob Lowe.
My brother Chad and I were rummaging around our pal Danny's treehouse-like cottage he shared with his single mom. I was 13. My brother and his friend were around 9. I had taken to co-opting my brother's friends in those early days after our arrival in Malibu because 13-year-olds thought the boys who wanted to act were probably queer, but 9-year-olds had no such judgments about my career aspirations. Chad and I had always been close, bonded by a tumultuous cross-country uprooting and the divorce that instigated it, and if he resented my glomming onto his friends, he never showed it. Chad, Danny, and I spent our free time attempting to shoot the hill on Larkspur Lane on our skateboards, and hiding perishable items among the shelves of our local market to monitor them as they rotted and began to stink.
Audiobook of the week.
All righty, there you go. Check out that one. A lot of fun. If you're going to read a celebrity memoir, I mean, read one with a little heart to it or listen to it. That book, it's got heart, it's got humor, and it's got the fun celebrity stories that you want. All right, that'll do it for us this week. Thank you so much to us.
Lev Grossman.
For putting Idaho just for some reason.
For us.
Was stuck on us. Thanks to Lev Grossman for coming on. Check out that book, The Bright Sword. Until next week, see ya.
Adios.
Word Freak, great book about competitive Scrabble.
There you go, Andrew.
All right, there Aloha. You go. Aloha.
I don't put any protein on the food.